9 o'clock, Press Watch. Teresa Mitchell's weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. Flashpoints at 10 with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 on Between the Covers, it's the collected stories of Diane Williams, over 300 new and previously published short fictions.
Cable Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Top Dog Underdog, running Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays through December 1st at the Chapel Theater in Milwaukee. Top Dog Underdog tells the story of sibling rivalry between African-American brothers and a turbulent relationship punctuated with dark humor. Their names are Lincoln and Booth. The show has adult content and is not recommended for children. Again, that's Top Dog Underdog, running Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays through December 1st at the Chapel Theater, 4107 Southeast Harrison Street in Milwaukee. More information can be found at KBOO.FM on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Before My Time Has Come music video premiere on Saturday, December 1st at 7:30 p.m. at Fifth Avenue Cinema in Portland. The song Before My Time Has Come was written 3 days after Parkland
and is dedicated to school shooting victims and survivors. This event features a live performance of the song, the video showing guests, speakers, and more.
Again, that's the Before My Time Has Come music video premiere on Saturday, December 1st at 7:30 p.m. at Fifth Avenue Cinema, 510 Southwest Hall Street in Portland.
More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Damn you, I was sitting in my class today. Wasn't planning on ending my life this way. Damn you.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Today, an update on Yemen as Senator Bernie Sanders is now leading an effort to block U.S. support for the Saudi-led war in Yemen. Our guest is Hakeem Jihan, chair of the Yemeni Alliance Committee, and the killing of a 21-year-old black man on Thanksgiving night at a mall in Alabama. Our guest is Aislinn Pulley, an organizer with Black Lives Matter Chicago, and A New Way of Life. 20 years this coming Sunday, their annual gala. Susan Burton, the founder of A New Way of Life, joins us to discuss the work of A New Way of Life and the impact it has had for women leaving prison. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
I'm Max Pringle with these headlines. Former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort is adamantly denying a report in The Guardian that he met secretly with WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange in 2016. The report came out as the special counsel looking into links between the Trump team and Russia accused Manafort of continually lying to them and breaching a plea agreement to cooperate with the probe. The report says the alleged Manafort-Assange meeting took place around the same time Russian intelligence began hacking into Democratic Party emails. All the while, Manafort's lawyers have been briefing Trump's attorneys on what their client has told investigators. It's an unusual arrangement that could give Trump ammunition in his feud against Special Counsel Robert Mueller. Democratic California Congressman Adam Schiff told CNN the whole thing looks suspicious.
If that double dealing was the result of dangling a pardon for Mr. Manafort, then you get into another issue, and that is the president again attempting to obstruct justice.
Besides denying he'd ever met Assange, Manafort, who is currently in jail, said he'd told Mueller's prosecutors the truth during questioning, and WikiLeaks said Manafort had never met with Assange. Assange, whose organization published thousands of emails stolen by Russian spies from Clinton's campaign in 2016, is in Ecuador's embassy in London under a claim of asylum. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo are to hold a closed-door briefing with lawmakers today that could determine how far Congress goes in punishing Saudi Arabia for the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Khashoggi had been highly critical of Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. President Trump has equivocated over who is to blame. The Senate is considering a vote as soon as this week to halt U.S. involvement in the Saudi-led war in Yemen. Administration officials were able to stall a Senate effort earlier this year against the Saudi-backed conflict in Yemen, but senators are outraged over the administration's response to Khashoggi's killing, and they're particularly upset that no one from the intelligence community is attending today's briefing. Maine Independent Senator Angus King told CNN that it's well past time to rethink the U.S. relationship with the repressive kingdom.
I think there are very good reasons for us to get out of the business of supporting what Saudi Arabia is doing in Yemen. It's one of the most serious and tragic human disasters in recent history. The estimate is 85,000 children in Yemen have starved to death.
A number of other lawmakers have grown uneasy with U.S. involvement in the Saudi-led campaign against the Houthis, the Iranian-backed rebels in Yemen. Human rights advocates say the Saudi-led coalition is indiscriminately bombing civilians and wreaking havoc on the country. Boeing has reassured travelers and airlines that its 737 MAX aircraft are as safe as any other airplane following a report of an investigation into a crash in Indonesia last month that killed 189 people. The aircraft manufacturer noted that the report on the details of the doomed flight cited actions by the flight crew that led to the crash. It noted the airline's maintenance work and procedures had failed to fix repeated problems with the aircraft. It also said records on installation and calibration of a key component, or an AOA sensor, were incomplete. The report said erroneous AOA data affected measurement of speed and altitude, contributing to the crash. Boeing said it is cooperating with investigators. It referred questions to the National Transportation Safety Board. Republican U.S. Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith won a divisive Mississippi runoff election Tuesday, marked by racial turmoil over a video-recorded remark Hyde-Smith made decried as racist. Hyde-Smith defeated Democrat Mike Espy, who was vying to become the state's first African-American senator since Reconstruction. The race was rocked by the video in which Hyde-Smith said of a supporter, quote, "If he invited me to a public hanging, I'd be in the front row," unquote. A separate video showed her talking about liberal folks and making it just a little more difficult for them to vote. The comments by Hyde-Smith, who is white, made Mississippi's history of racist lynchings a theme of the runoff and spurred many black voters to return to the polls on Tuesday. San Francisco city leaders marked the 40th anniversary of the assassinations of Mayor George Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk Tuesday at City Hall. Over the decades, Moscone has come to be seen as an icon of the city's progressive movement, and Milk has become a worldwide symbol of LGBT rights. Christopher Martinez reports.
On November 27, 1978, disgruntled former supervisor Dan White went to City Hall and shot dead Mayor George Moscone, then went to Milk's office and killed him. LGBT rights activist Cleve Jones was a 24-year-old intern for Milk. He says when Milk was killed, his first thought was, "It's over. It's all over." But that changed when he saw the outpouring of grief and support for Milk. He says it's still painful to contemplate what Milk and Moscone could have accomplished if they had not been murdered.
I think George eventually would have become governor of the state of California. I think Harvey would have probably have become mayor. I think often about what a difference it might have made in the early years of the HIV/AIDS pandemic if we'd had an openly gay mayor.
Stuart Milk is Harvey's nephew. He says Harvey Milk's lesson is important now in these difficult political times.
So thank you, San Francisco, for reminding us your differences. What makes you different is the medicine that will heal the world.
Reporting from San Francisco City Hall, I'm Christopher Martinez.
And I'm Max Pringle. You're listening to Sojourner Truth on Pacifica Radio.
This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth, the future of the crisis in Yemen, which the United Nations has called the world's worst humanitarian crisis, hangs in the balance of crucial developments this week. In the United States, pushed by Senator Bernie Sanders, more than 50 prominent figures and former officials have signed a letter urging Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and his colleagues to end U.S. involvement in the Saudi-led war in Yemen. A bipartisan group of senators have been pushing to end U.S. support for the Saudi coalition in Yemen with a vote that could come as soon as today, Wednesday, November 28th. The bill, which is co-sponsored by Senators Bernie Sanders of Vermont, Republican Mike Lee of Utah, and Chris Murphy, Democrat of Connecticut, would force the Trump administration to stop backing Saudi Arabia and their allies in this war in Yemen, including the United Arab Emirates and other coalition members. They would have to stop, U.S. would have to stop its support within 30 days. It invokes the 1973 War Powers Act, defining Congress's role in a president's decision to carry out military actions abroad. The resolution now has 16 co-sponsors. Meanwhile, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and Secretary of Defense James Mattis have been summoned to brief the U.S. Senate on Wednesday, November 28th, on the situation. U.S. lawmakers have increasingly expressed concern about the Trump administration's close relationship with Saudi Arabia amid its involvement in the devastating war in Yemen and the murder and the cutting up of the body of U.S.-based journalist Jamal Khashoggi last month. Khashoggi's murder took place at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, Germany, and the CIA has pretty much come out and said that the killing was ordered by the Crown Prince Salman. But the Trump administration is giving the Crown Prince and Saudi Arabia a pass. On the international front, pressure is mounting on Saudi Arabia to end its war in Yemen. In Tunisia, hundreds of demonstrators marched through the capital of Tunis on Tuesday, November 27th, protesting Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's visit. The protesters chanted, "Go away, assassin, and you're not welcome," in solidarity with Yemen. The government of Bolivia under President Evo Morales has issued a scathing report to the United Nations condemning Saudi violence against Yemen, calling for an immediate end to Saudi airstrikes and boosting humanitarian aid for Yemen. Meanwhile, in Argentina, the Saudi Crown Prince Salman is already beginning to face opposition as he arrived in Buenos Aires in the run-up to the G20 summit that is taking place on November 30th. In Argentina. On Monday, November 26, Human Rights Watch filed a formal request to use a war crimes clause in Argentina's constitution to investigate any involvement by the Crown Prince in possible crimes against humanity in Yemen and also in relation to Khashoggi's murder. And within Yemen itself, a lot of developments happening. On Monday, November 26, Yemen's Shia rebels said that they will halt rocket fire into Saudi Arabia for the sake of peace efforts, answering a key Saudi demand in the push to stop the civil war going on there from worsening. Also, the UN envoy for Yemen announced on Friday, November 23rd, that the country's government and rival Shia rebels have agreed to attend talks in Sweden aimed at ending that three-year war. So we're going to be discussing what's going on, but let's get a bit of a roundup in the news from Al Jazeera. Here's Donald Trump giving the Saudis a pass. And from CBS, Bernie Sanders calling for an end to the Yemen war.
The U.S. president received his intelligence report into the killing of Jamal Khashoggi, and he's rejected the idea. It firmly says the Saudi Crown Prince ordered the operation.
Maybe he did, maybe he didn't.
Donald Trump says he's standing by Saudi Arabia, a country he believes will help in his action against Iran and can help sell a Middle East peace deal to the Palestinians. He's also talked about the arms sales agreed with Saudi Arabia as important to the US economy, even though numerous sources dispute the value in terms of dollars and jobs. But the man who will lead the House of Representatives Intelligence Committee in January, Democrat Adam Schiff, says he's seen intelligence reports too, and the answer is more definitive.
The president is not being honest with the country about the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. I think in part he feels that by saying that we don't know or that the world is a dangerous place or everybody does it, he thinks it makes him look strong. It actually makes him look weak.
But it's not just Democrats who are piling pressure on the White House. Trump ally, Republican Senator Mike Lee, says there are bound to be congressional hearings into U.S. links with Saudi Arabia.
Look, I don't know why he's siding with the Saudis, but I think there are things we can do to change our relationship with the Saudis, notwithstanding whatever his personal motivations might be.
Donald Trump may well come face-to-face with the Saudi Crown Prince when he heads to the G20 meeting of leading industrialized countries in Argentina later this week. Despite widespread international condemnation of the killing of the Washington Post writer, one leading Saudi royal says other leaders know they have to do business with Mohammed bin Salman.
Whether leaders in that summit will warmly engage with the Crown Prince or not, I think all of them recognize that the kingdom as a country and King Salman and the Crown Prince are people that they have to deal with.
Congressional leaders seem united on the conclusion reached by U.S. intelligence services that Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman was responsible for the operation that killed Jamal Khashoggi. Senators will receive another classified briefing on Tuesday. That may well increase pressure on Donald Trump, not just to use stronger words, but to back that up with action. Alan Fisher, Al Jazeera, Washington.
Well, one of the foreign policy issues you do talk about in your book is your call for pulling back any kind of U.S. support for the Saudi-led war in Yemen. There is a resolution you have backed along with Republican Mike Lee. Do you see, given the scrutiny in the wake of the killing of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi, new support for this bill?
I do. When we brought this up, I think it was in March, we ended up with 44 votes, only five Republicans. I think we now have a chance to get a majority of the United States Senate. I think people are looking at the horrific humanitarian disaster now taking place in Yemen. There was a recent report that over the last number of years, some 75,000 children have died of starvation. This is a country dealing with cholera. A country dealing with a terrible level of famine. So you got that issue. You got the issue that this war was never authorized by the United States Congress in violation of our Constitution. And you got the Khashoggi incident, which says that we have a Saudi government led by a despotic ruler who killed a political opponent in cold blood. Add that all together. I think the American people in Congress are now saying, let us end the support, our support for the Saudi-led war in Yemen.
All righty, there you go. I'd like to welcome our guest, Hakeem Jihan, chair of the Yemeni Alliance Committee, which is working with other groups, including Just Foreign Policy and Action Corps. The groups noted that Trump last week defended U.S. government support for the Saudi-led war. Hakeem, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so Hakeem, a lot going on the Hill today, and it seems as though you and your colleagues managed to get support from Nancy Pelosi on this. Tell us, you know, where things are right now, and are you expecting that this bill has a chance of going through the Senate?
Yeah, that's right. A couple of weeks ago, we rallied under Nancy Pelosi's San Francisco office, you know, demanding her to stand behind or sponsor HCON Res 138, which is a similar War Powers resolution in the House. Unfortunately, as you know, that resolution was blocked in the House. So we anticipate that SJ Res 54, the War Powers Resolution in the Senate, that may be voted on today. There's been a lot of traction. We've been organizing and rallying across the country, asking folks to call their lawmakers, to urge them to stand behind this resolution. And we've received a lot of, positive reinforcement that senators are, those that have voted against the resolution back in March have swayed and are supporting SJ Res 54. So we are hoping that today the Senate does stand on the right side of history and does support the end to supporting and backing the Saudi-led war in Yemen.
Right, and that's something our listeners could do again. That is SJ Res 54 in the Senate, and a lot of action happening on that today. Now, just to give our listeners a sense of what's at stake here, Jihan Hakeem, tell us what you know about the situation on the ground, the humanitarian crisis going on in Yemen.
You know, it's really hard to track, and the political climate changes every day, but millions of children are at immediate risk of starvation. Save the Children has said that more than 85,000 children have died due to starvation and complications of hunger. So we are actually saying that they are being starved because food is being used as a tool due to the blockade that is happening on both sides of the warring parties. And there have been videos and pictures of children eating leaves. About 75% of Yemen's population, which is 22 million people, are at need humanitarian assistance right away. And nearly half of those that are in need are children. And if we recall, a couple of years ago, the UN estimated that the casualties were about 10,000. And I think they have stopped counting. The death toll has risen up to 50,000. Others said that they've stopped counting after 50,000. And another report by the UN said that after this call, after every 10 minutes, a child dies due to preventable diseases. That means after this call, a child may have died in Yemen. And let's not forget about the cholera outbreak that has taken the lives of over a million Yemenis. And as in most humanitarian crises, unfortunately, women and children comprise about three-quarters of Yemen's 3 million displaced, and they are paying the heaviest price.
Right. Now, you mentioned the blockade on both sides, causing a lot of suffering there and lending to the humanitarian crisis. But certainly the bombing by Saudi Arabia with the support of the United States has devastated the place and are also key people in keeping that blockade going. I mean, so many children and non-combatants have died as a result of this bombing.
Yeah, it is without a doubt that the airstrikes have hit weddings, funerals, schools, and hospitals, as well as water and electricity plants, killing and wounding thousands. There are rules of war, but it seems that the Saudi coalition is not respecting the rules of war. And as many may or may not know, that the U.S. has provided logistical support, targeting and child intelligence, and up until recently, fuel for the Saudi warplanes that has been bombing Yemen. So we're also the top arms sellers to the kingdom. So the bombs that are killing Yemenis are made in the USA.
That's right. And the members of this so-named Saudi Arabia-led military coalition include the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Kuwait, Egypt, Jordan, Morocco, Senegal, Sudan, the United States, the UK, Australia, Turkey, Canada, South Korea, and France. So quite a lot involved there. Now, the other piece to this that has alarmed a lot of people, Jihan, the response of Donald Trump to the Saudi, what a couple of things. I mean, the killing of the U.S.-based journalist Khashoggi, right, in embassy, a Saudi embassy in Turkey, and Donald Trump basically giving the crown prince, who undoubtedly not only knew about this, but it is reported ordered the killing, a pass because of the amount of money that Saudi Arabia will invest in the United States. And I wondered if you wanted to comment on that, because you have said it seems as though the lives in Yemen, you know, are worth less than this deal that Donald Trump is touting with Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, I think we can see the sheer brutality in what the Saudi regime did to their own. You know, they don't take dissent very well, and that is what happened to one of their own when he did speak out against them. And the fact that number 45 is, you know, becoming the Saudi regime's or MBS's PR firm, I believe. He just recently released a statement called Standing with Saudi Arabia. So it is apparent that the lives or the cost of human life is not as urgent or valuable as the, let's say, $450 billion through the arms deal that is at stake, that will supposedly increase the jobs of many thousands of Americans, which may be canceled if the U.S. pushes the Saudis or calls them out on their war crimes that they've committed in Yemen with our support.
And a lot of this having to do with Iran. I mean, Trump is going around saying, well, Saudi Arabia would be glad to pull out of Yemen if Iran pulled out. But there are really a lot of conflicting reports there. I mean, if the rebels have some kind of alliance with Iran, it is really unclear and unproven that there are Iranian troops on the ground, from what I could gather. You may know differently, fighting in Yemen, but also the pressure that Donald Trump wants to put on Iran, having scuttled the nuclear deal on the one hand. But on the other hand, Saudi Arabia, as everybody knows, they've been trying to get a nuclear weapon, right? And they're getting billions of dollars from the United States. So, you know, just your thoughts on all of this, because the women and children and civilians in Yemen are really paying a price for this high-stakes standoff with Saudi Arabia and the United States wanting to pressure Iran, and Israel also playing a role in that. Jihan, your final thoughts here.
Yeah, whether or not Iran is supporting or backing the Houthi rebels, there have been reports that said perhaps they do provide them with some support. Geographically, it's not possible at the extent that the administration is claiming. I think this is a proxy war in the making. What we do know is that the coalition, which consists of the countries that you mentioned, almost 10 now, are supporting and backing the Saudi coalition, which are striking Yemeni civilians and combatants as well. But those that have been killed have majority been casualties who've been civilians. And we do know that there have been boots on the ground from the Sudanese troops and also American troops that have been on the ground in the borders of Yemen. So those are actual facts. So what we do really need to do is hold our lawmakers accountable, and we don't expect for the war to end if the U.S. stops supporting the Saudi coalition, but we do hope for some relief to be provided by our support. I mean, we have to stand by our values and demand that Congress steps up, and if we're not authorized to be in active war in Yemen, so what are we doing? Let's pass SJRES 54, at least pull us out of the war in Yemen, and then, you know, the UN can deal with the rest.
Yeah, and at least this is a step in the right direction, because the other piece of it, I mean, I definitely think this is important that this vote wins, right, and will help. But also there are remains all of the money and all of the weapons that the United States is providing to Saudi Arabia. And it remains to be seen. I mean, the G20, the world's power brokers, heads of state, etc., meeting in Argentina in just a couple of days. Vladimir Putin is going to be there, expecting, he says, to have a sit down with Donald Trump. But Prince Salman is already on the ground there. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised, certainly, even if it's not made public, if Donald Trump does not have some kind of sit down with Prince Salman. So we'll have to see how all of this plays out. But again, Hakeem, you're asking people to contact members of Congress, right, wherever they are in the country.
Yeah, they can simply call 1-833-STOP-WAR, and that number will direct them to their lawmaker based on their location. And they can leave a message or speak to a live person and urge them that Congress needs to take back their power, and they need to urge them to support SJ Res 54 proposed by Bernie Sanders and Mike Lee. It's a bipartisan bill. This issue is a bipartisan issue. This is an illegitimate war. It doesn't matter which side you stand on. We must pull out of supporting the Saudi-led coalition.
Right. Is there a hashtag also connected to this effort?
Yes. All the organizing that we've been doing, and all the way to Yemen, the hashtag is #YemenCan'tWait.
Right. Okay. Repeat that hashtag.
#YemenCan'tWait.
Okay. Hakeem Jihan, chair of the Yemeni Alliance Committee, thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you.
We're going to take a station break. And coming up, our campaigners for Black Lives segment, black men in two shot down by police in a 2-week period. We'll be joined by organizer with Black Lives Matter Chicago, and the great Susan Burton will join us about her efforts for so many years helping women who are transitioning out of prisons and jails. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Good morning. It's 8:31. This is KBOO. Coming up at 9, it's Press Watch with Teresa Mitchell. The weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. Flashpoints at 10 with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on Between the Covers, it's the collected stories of Diane Williams, over 300 new and previously published short fictions. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. Become a member by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate. It's 8:32.
If I could be king, even for a day, I'd take him as my queen. I'd have him no other way. And I love rule in this kingdom.
Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. We always appreciate your support. Now, 21-year-old Emantic Fitzgerald Bradford Jr. was shot and killed by an off-duty police officer who worked as a security guard at a mall in Alabama. This killing took place on Thanksgiving night. When the story was first reported, police claimed that Bradford was involved in a shooting that took place at the mall. They later and that they had basically killed the shooter, right? Now, they later recanted that story. And the shooter in the actual incident that led up to Mr. Bradford's killing is still at large. Furthermore, Mr. Bradford's parents have said the police did not contact them and they learned of his killing on social media. Also, they said their son's body was left lying in a pool of blood and that police did not have the decency to cover him up. Mr. Bradford was exercising his Second Amendment rights to carry a registered gun, and indeed, he was trying to protect shoppers at the mall when he was shot and killed. Why? They saw a black man with a gun. Mr. Bradford's father, who shares the same name as his son, is retired after having been a supervisor at the Birmingham City Jail. Now, according to the New York Times, Mr. Bradford's shooting was the second black man to be killed wrongfully by police in a two-week period. Jamel Roberson was killed in Chicago while on duty working as a security guard. He was in pursuit of a gunman when police shot and killed him. The NRA and Donald Trump, they always go on about the importance of a good guy with a gun, but that standard clearly does not apply to a black man with a gun. Let us go now to a few short clips, a short one from CNN about the police shooting narrative, and from the Washington Post. I think the aunt of Mr. Bradford speaking out in that Washington Post piece.
It was just about 10 o'clock on Thursday night, Thanksgiving night, when police say originally said that 21-year-old E.J. Bradford was involved in an altercation that led to the shooting of an 18-year-old male and a 12-year-old female bystander. But over the weekend, that story dramatically changed. And now police here in Hoover, Alabama, just south of Birmingham, say they do not believe that it's likely that Bradford fired those shots at all and that the shooter is still here on the loose. Now, Hoover Police released a new statement here this morning saying that they're extending their condolences and their thoughts and prayers to the family of E.J. Bradford. But they also say that they have clear evidence that suggests that Bradford brandished a weapon in the seconds after the shooting erupted there inside the mall, and that that led to that chaotic situation.
Your son, your 21-year-old son, who has no criminal record, was the person who was shot and killed, and the gunman is still on the loose. What have police told you about this horrible mistake?
They haven't told me anything yet. Nobody has responded. You know, we hadn't gotten no calls and no apology. Nothing has been told to us what happened, what transpired, and led up to this point.
Mr. Bradford, the police, in this horrible, tragic case of mistaken identity, have not reached out to you, his family.
No, not at all.
Mr. Bradford, you also, it should be said, are 25 years a correctional officer. You're in law enforcement. You know police and are friends with them in this area. So have you asked them for the video? And have you asked them why they're not reaching out to your family and making some sort of compensation to you?
You called them. No, I haven't, because I think that's just is showing respect for another person, regardless of where I worked or how long I worked there. You should just obviously do that to a parent and let that parent know, hey, my condolences, I'm sorry we made a mistake.
They took my son from me, and my Thanksgiving will never be the same. I'll never be able to see my son's face again, or to look into his eyes, or to hear him say, Mom, I love you. Love you, Mom, love you. And hug on me and kiss on me, you know. And like his father has said, no one has even reached out to us in any type of way. So my Thanksgiving will never be the same.
Oh, he was a great guy. He was very respectable. He was just a great guy. I mean, he wasn't no bad kid. He's a good guy. He's a military guy. He's military. He's a soldier. And they did him wrong. And they're going to have to pay. They didn't have to take him like that. He was not the shooter, and he's out here at large. Why are the police not out here trying to get him? Whoever that person is. Well, who don't carry a gun? So if he got it, he had a permit for it. Why he can't carry it? Shucks. Hey. It is what it is.
And that was the voice of the aunt of 21-year-old Menadic Fitzgerald Bradford Jr., who was shot and killed by an off-duty police officer. Okay, and that off-duty police officer was working as a security guard. Now, all of this within the context of the racially charged race that just finished up for Senate in Mississippi, when the white woman candidate who has now won that race said she would be glad if invited to a public hanging. All right, well, remember all those lynchings? And also, this killing of this 21-year-old happened in Alabama, and the history of Alabama when on September 15th, 1963, four black girls were killed by a white supremacist bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church. Alabama was an epicenter during the Civil Rights era, as was Mississippi. And the famous case of Emmett Till hailed from Chicago, but he was killed in the Deep South, and his killing really helped to spark the modern day civil rights movement. I'd like to welcome our guest, Aslyn Pulley, an organizer with Black Lives Matter Chicago. Aslyn, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to be a part of this important conversation.
Yes, Aslyn was an organizer also with We Charge Genocide, a founding member of Insight Arts, a cultural nonprofit that used art for social change, and a member of the performance ensemble End of the Ladder. She is a founder of the Young Women's Performance Ensemble, dedicated to ending sexual assault, Visibility Now, as well as the founder and creator of Urban Youth Magazine, Underground Philosophy. She joined the staff of the Chicago Torture Justice Center this year as director of programming. Aslyn, you're busy. A lot going on here.
Yeah, right. A lot going on. Unfortunately, it's not all good.
It's not all good. And indeed, you are in Chicago. So tell us what happened with Jamel Robertson, because we're hearing about Emmatic Bradford Jr., who was killed in Alabama, but a lot of people didn't hear much about what happened with Jamel.
Yeah, so there's an important distinction. Jamel Robertson was 26 years old, and he was working as a security guard in a suburban lounge, basically like a nightclub, and was killed while subduing a shooting suspect. And he was in full security guard, you know, uniform and hat that said security on it. The witnesses were yelling at the suburban police officers that he was security to put down their guns. And he was shot and killed on November 11th of this year by Midlothian police. So there have been protests regularly since then. So for the past 2 weeks, we've had protests in Midlothian, which is a suburb just about 40 minutes outside of Chicago. We've had protests and vigils in the city. He went to my high school, and so we organized a vigil at my high school with a bunch of his classmates and friends and family. And the next day, the basketball team, because he was a member of the basketball team there, did another vigil. There's been marches continually. Tonight we're going to the Midlothian Village board meeting where the mayor will be to demand three things. We're demanding the naming of the officer, because they have not released the name of the officer who killed him. We're naming that he immediately be fired and that charges of murder be immediately brought against him for the unjust murder of Jamel Roberson, who himself had wanted to be a police officer.
Right, and clearly was killed just because, again, he was a black man with a gun. Now, Emantic, I think I have that right now, Emantic Bradford Jr., are people or protesters in Chicago with Black Lives Matter and other community groups now making the connection with what happened with Emantic? Because it's not exactly the same situation, but he was, I think, in the army, and he was really, it seems, trying to be a good guy and protect people in the mall. While Jamel, on the other hand, was really trying to disarm a gunman, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. he was successful. He successfully apprehended the shooting suspect, and could potentially save dozens of lives, right? And then lost his own because black people in this country are not considered full citizens, and the Second Amendment doesn't apply to us. People are definitely drawing links between what happened, here as well as what happened in Alabama, and also linking it to the murder of Harith Snoop Augustus, which happened earlier this year in Chicago, who also had a gun, also had had a legal permit to have a gun, and merely because CPD saw his gun on him, they shot and killed him. And then I don't know if you recall, but immediately after that happened, the community descended upon the area where he was murdered, and police then beat a bunch of protesters. Mm. And we held marches daily after that. I mean, there are so many examples of the Second Amendment not applying to black people in this country. And it's indicative of the fact that we are not considered full citizens, and we are continually held up to standards that no one else in this country, aside from our indigenous brothers and sisters, are relegated to, the level of violence and police killings that happen to our people is unjust, and we need to rise up and connect all of these killings because they're not isolated, like you said.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. We are going to have to wrap up here, but you think of Deontay Yarber killed in a Walmart parking lot in California, Stephon Clark, Antoine Rose, Tamir Rice. Mm-hmm. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on, and it's like enough is enough. So we appreciate your efforts, Aislinn Pulley, and we also want to thank Black Lives Matter Los Angeles, in particular Dr. Melina Abdullah, founder of Black Lives Matter in LA. We partner with them for our weekly campaigners for Black Lives. So Aislinn, please keep us posted, and we hope to hear more from you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Now, wrapping up our show, the U.S. has the largest prison population in the world, and while the majority of prisoners are men, women, in particular single mothers, are now the fastest growing population of those going to prison. When women leave prison or jail, there are few places they can turn to for much needed help to avoid getting caught in the cycle of going back to prison or jail. To help fill this void, in 1998, Susan Burton herself, a former prisoner, founded a New Way of Life Reentry Project. And now, under the theme, Remembering the Women, a New Way of Life Reentry Project will hold its 20th annual gala on Sunday, December 2nd. Now, since its founding, a New Way of Life has provided a safe home for women transitioning out of prisons and jails, helping women and with training that they might need, helping to break the cycle of addiction, to be reunited with their children, with counseling, and much more. Susan Burton, one of my sheroes, welcome back.
Good morning, Margaret. Okay. I've been listening to the show, and it's just tragic what happens. And as you know, my son, 5 years old, was killed by a LAPD detective. And out of that, I had to find somewhere to put the love that that's not lost but grows, the love for my son. And that's when I founded A New Way of Life. And I feel so bad for the moms, you know, because, you know, I know what it feels like for your son to be killed by police, and they never even say, I'm sorry, or they never even acknowledge that they've done harm. But what I did eventually, after much suffering, much incarceration, when I finally got help, I was able to become help. And I founded A New Way of Life. And Margaret, you've been there all these years and along with us, and I've watched you and I've learned from you. And, you know, I'm really, really grateful that this is our 20th year. And we're going to be celebrating you, too, and talking about your accomplishments. This coming Sunday, we'll be celebrating 20 years. And Margaret, I didn't think, you know, when I began to bring women into my home, I just knew that they needed help. And, you know, the organization has grown to provide legal services and organizing, policy, leadership development, family reunification. And I'm amazed, and I'm very grateful, and I'm looking forward to seeing you Sunday and lifting up all of the work that you've been doing over the years. You know, we've stayed the course, Margaret.
Yes,
we've stayed the course.
Absolutely, and I can't forget that, Susan Burton, remembering meeting you so very long ago. I think we were in a meeting somewhere speaking out about some injustice, yes, having to do with women. But Susan Burton, I mean, you mentioned the work that you've been doing, A New Way of Life. I mean, you have a legal clinic. There is the Women Organizing for Justice Project. There is the, yes, film festival Justice on Trial. There is the, yes, work you do also with All of Us or None. And then there's this video series, and I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about that, called Testify video series.
Yes.
Tell,
yes,
us a bit about what that's, yes, about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Testify is the testimony of formerly incarcerated women, their experience and their children's experience. We brought children to give the children a platform to talk about what it meant to have their mother gone. And so Testify is a video series of women's voices. As you mentioned, you know, women are the fastest growing segment of the prison system. And when I was writing my book, Becoming Miss Burden, I was trying to find research about women, and there was very little out there. And how can this be that we're not thinking enough about the women? We're not looking at what this mass incarceration of women, who the women are, what's their age, what's their ethnicity? So the theme for our gala is remembering the women. We are remembering the women, and we're lifting them up. We are creating a safe passage for them to come back into the community, to get engaged and involved in change, in social change, to get their babies back. You know, this is fast forward, the same thing happening in the 1800s in the when your baby was taken from you and you never see your baby again because the baby's at the farm down the road.
Yeah.
We're trying to make our communities whole again, safe again.
Yeah.
Through the work that we do. So we are remembering the women, and people could go to A New Way of Life .org. That's A New Way of Life .org, and find more information about the gala on Sunday.
Can people still get tickets there as well?
They, they can still get tickets there. Yes.
And it's such a good cause. I mean, one of my favorite charities. And, of course, honorees include Ellen Adler, Adler from the New Press, the Peter Sheehan, who is an attorney, Ingrid Archie, who will be getting the Flozell Woodmore Award. I so remember Flozell when she passed away. What a great loss. And the host is going to be Val Zavala with KCET, television journalist and news executive. She's retired now, but Val will be there. So people can still get tickets, and I really hope that people will attend. And Supervisor Mark Ridley-Thomas will be doing the opening remarks from the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors. So
and Margaret, Margaret, what about now? You're getting an award also, so say your name too.
Oh, well, you've already said it, and it's a Movement Builder Award. And Susan, I mean, you have always understood the work that I've been doing at the base, including, but not only the work on the serial murders of Black women in South Los Angeles, and that'll be an opportunity to shine a light on those women that we're never going to forget. But I also just want to let our listeners know, Susan, that your story is an inspiration to women across the United States, particularly formerly incarcerated women and women in recovery from addiction to alcohol and drugs. And your book, Becoming Ms. Burton, From Prison to Recovery to Leading the Fight for Incarcerated Women, details that story. It is award-winning, and you are an award-winning activist with the Citizen Activist Award from the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. You've been a Soros Fellow, the Women's Policy Institute Fellow, and you were CNN hero at some point. So, Susan, you certainly have walked your walk, and you can do it alone, because I marvel at how a new way of life keeps going and keeps growing, but you need the resources in order for that to happen. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, we do. We, you know, a woman asked me, I was in Virginia where those folks marched out with teachers, and Talitha Lefonte asked me what I was going to do with the money that I got there. And I told her I was going to buy some freedom. Freedom ain't free. And, you know, she said, "What do you? I'm gonna buy some women freedom. I'm gonna plant this money in a place that they'll have a safe house to come to, and be able to get free." So yes, resources are important, and we're trying to just build out safe communities. We know that police say is safety is not safety for us.
Right.
It's threat.
Okay.
It's, yeah. So.
And Susan, if people cannot attend the gala, we hope they will get tickets to attend the gala. They can always make a donation to A New Way of Life on your website. Is that right?
Yes, they can go to anewwayoflife.org and make a donation. And if people want to call into office and get more information on our legal services, our post-conviction legal services, and our clinics, that phone number is 323-563-3575.
Well, we'll post that on our social media. Susan Burton, thank you so very much for all that you do. Thank you.
I'll see you on Sunday, Margaret.
All righty. See you on Sunday. We are out of time. Today's show produced by me. That's Margaret Prescott. I'd like to thank the Sojourner Truth team, our engineer today, Mr. T. Teddy Robinson, our assistant producer, Romero Funes is better and he's back. And our intern, Julianne Tweeten. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to Pacifica Radio Archives.org. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Prescott.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a development director. This 32-hour-a-week position develops and implements the yearly fundraising plan, develops promotional and press materials, and supports the anti-oppression work of KBOO. Send a cover letter and resume to Delphine Crescenzo at del@kboo.org or send to KBOO Development Hire, 20 Southeast 8th, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Please answer in the cover letter the question, why is KBOO important? More information on the development director position is available at kboo.fm/developmenthire2018.
This is Jeremy Scahill, author of Dirty Wars, and you're listening to KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
KBOO, Portland.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. David K. Johnston, who's been in this studio, has published an article on Alternet titled, Donald Trump May Have Just Lied His Way Into Prison. He writes, pay close attention to the front page story in Wednesday's New York Times about Paul Manafort's lawyer cooperating with Trump's lawyers. It may well prove to be very important news that is just a short way down the road. He writes, Bob Summerbee, pardon me,